Well, ever since you read the Book of Enoch, I've been more interested in it. So I started reading a little bit more, doing a little bit more research on it. And when I was reading, when they talk about Enoch, it's like he was taken up. The way I read it, it's kind of like he was taken up in an aircraft. And I don't know how you feel, or it'd be interesting to see how everybody else interpreted that have read that. But for me, because at first I just thought, when I've heard about that before, I thought, okay, was he just like lifted up like an angel, or did God just lift him up? But the more I read, it was just fascinating to me that I thought, like, my interpretation was it was like an aircraft. And I found that interesting because it's like, how we talk about there's no coincidences and everything's kind of tied together. But like in the Hindu religions, the art, like the ancient Egyptian art, they all have art of like these spacecraft, these aircrafts. And it's kind of like, how is that part? Like, how did they know those things? How did they get those things?
Well, even like in medieval Renaissance paintings, you'll see like a spaceship in the background if you've watched like episodes of Ancient Aliens. And I know exactly what you're talking about. There's so much Egyptian art. And in the Hindu religion, there's even a war that takes place where it says that they use these kind of supernatural aircraft to fight basically like the bad gods and the good gods. They go to battle and they're using these sort of flying chariots, and they end up kind of like destroying, and it breaks off an island. And what I really think is strange too is that there's so many instances of things like that just in our regular Bible. So you have like Ezekiel talking about the wheels in the sky. So many things relate back to UFO phenomena to me that are in the Bible. And yes, in the book of Enoch, I wonder the same thing when it's talking about him being taken up, because you think about the way that it kind of talks about this happening. He goes to all these different places and all these different places in the stars,
I
and he
know.
sees how they're interacting.
Yeah, because I know we talked about, like, before the with the Book of Enoch, like, he talks about was the 10 realms of heaven. And I know we're not going to go into all that today, but it's kind of like that's kind of what he visited.
He even went to a place that was like crystals or like ice. And in my mind, that makes me think of like, Antarctica or the North Pole or something like that, where it's completely, well, he said it was hot and cold, but that reminds me of like dry ice because it's so cold that it actually burns.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And I mean, for him to know that, for him to be someone that is from this kind of desert land and this hot land, to be talking about something that does exist on our earth. And then he goes up into the stars and he's talking about the stars and how everything works and operates. And we talked about how the angels that are over different astrological phenomenon, and we look at the stars and we look at constellations. And it makes you wonder too, when we talk about astrology, and we'll often refer to how we have a fear of astrology because of our backgrounds with being Christians, and there's kind of a thing where with religion you're not supposed to look into astrology at all.
Well, sometimes it makes you wonder, like, was that kind of taken out of context, or why is that kind of in there? Because when you look at things, it's like God created the heavens and the earth. He said, look to the stars. And like you said, that's what the wise men followed, was the star.
Well, the Magi, who is believed to be Zoroastrian kings, they call them the three kings or whatever. And it's a weird thing that they're following the stars. They're following this Bethlehem star. They're finding Jesus. And when they went to King Herod, they said that, they read the stars, and that's how they know that this new king is going to be born. And they came to him bearing the gifts of a king, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So these were the gifts that you would give royalty. And they found him, of course, in a manger, and
I know.
they gave him these gifts. I think all of it's very strange. And then they also had the ability to prophesy, because then they go to Joseph and they say, don't go back to your land, go to Egypt, flee to Egypt, because King Herod is still looking for
you. That's true.
And so you're looking at the gifts of prophecy, kind of a psychic ability. And then you're looking at this gift of reading the stars, which is an astrology ability. And so, you know, it kind of makes you wonder about whether or not these things are to be looked at in such a negative way. I mean, you can use anything for bad or good.
That's true.
Just about anything.
I think just people being open to it, and like, you know, everybody can have their opinion, or like, what do you think this is, or what do you think it means? Because it's interesting to have other people's opinion on things.
Yeah.
And get, you know, it just opens up that conversation. And going back to the stars, was it? Is it pronounced the Dogon people?
Yeah, the Dogon tribe,
Yes, I was fascinated. I read that they knew that there was a three-star system that we didn't even know about until like the 20th century.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did they know that?
Yeah, and they have the weirdest, if you look at like their ancient art, it's so bizarre. And their whole story is essentially like a supernatural being from the stars came down and explained all of these things to do with the star system to these people. And it's not, that's not even the only tribe that things like that have happened to. There's another tribe of people who had sort of supernatural astronomy knowledge they shouldn't have at that time.
Sometimes I wonder if that's why they did remove the Book of Enoch, because it's kind of like, they didn't want to have that astronomical, the astronomical side, if I'm saying that right, that aspect of that.
Yeah.
Because it's so much in there.
Mm-hmm. There's so much about the systems of stars. And
yes. And I mean, even that's actually one of the realms, like the 10 realms of heaven. There's one that's specifically like just the zodiac. There's one. There's the moon and star, the moon and sun. And then one of them is like the basically like astronomy, that side of it.
Well, every single solitary society of people, ancient society, ancient religion always has some sort of zodiac aspect. And when they dug up these ancient temples in Hebrew, these where they were practicing the Hebrew religion, they were practicing Jews. And when they dug up these temples, they found the zodiac wheel with the constellations.
That's so crazy.
And they're a little out of order.
Wow.
And but you can clearly see it if you just look it up. There's so many. And so they were inside of these ancient Judaic temples. And it's, you know, when you think about it, there's really, I think, something there.
I think there's too. I mean, speaking of that kind of stuff, like even today, like there was like this blue moon that we were going out and looking at the other night. It was like, oh, that's where we get the saying once in a blue moon.
Yeah.
Because it's not supposed to happen for I forget how long. Yeah. And we're like, oh gosh, we better see this now. But then also, you know, they talk about that in the Bible. They talk about the blood moon, the red moon. I mean, it's like, it's there. It's just, you know, how deep you want to really go into it. And of course, you know, we do, we personally, you know, we believe in the Book of Enoch. And it's just fascinating because, you know, we do believe in like fallen angels.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where we think, or, you know, we feel like that's kind of how a lot of those people got that information.
Yeah.
Was through the fallen angels.
Yeah.
Teaching them those things.
Yeah, and it's such a neat thing to think about in a way, because it's like we look at the Book of Enoch, and for so long you couldn't look at something like that, but now you can very easily read it. And it even reminds me too of having a lot of similarities to the Book of Revelation. And whenever I'm reading the Book of Revelation, I actually, when you really read it and you look at it in the context of look to the stars for signs, we're going to look to the heavens for signs, you can see that some of these things, like when it's talking about different beasts and different things like that, to me, it relates back to constellations.
That's true.
And stars. So, I mean, if that's one of the ways that we're supposed to be looking for signs, it's just kind of an interesting thing to think about.
I mean, it all kind of falls into, we just had that eclipse this year. And it was a big thing. I mean, everybody really is, I think, in general, a lot of people are interested in that.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before, but I think we've had this massive spiritual awakening. And yes. With that, there's a lot of different signs that come with a spiritual awakening. And one of those to me is that natural drive to look at the stars or to look yes. at the heavens and to look at the earth and to mm-hmm. feel the earth around you.
Yes. I think sometimes we're just here on this earth and we don't really take it all in. I mean, sure, we might see trees or grass or whatever, but it's kind of like when you really are having that spiritual awakening, you begin to see these things, or for me anyway.
Yeah.
It's like this is a living thing, and of course we know it's living, but it's kind of like it's more than just, oh, it's, you know, it's just a tree, but mm-hmm. it's actually a life energy force.
Yeah.
Every tree, every bush, every growing thing, every animal, every insect, like it's just kind of this really part of the universe, and it's all kind of, everything is so cohesive and goes together perfectly.
Beautifully. I read this weird thing about how they did a study on plants and flowers and things like that, and everything vibrates, of course. Mm-hmm. We know that everything has a frequency. But when they used a machine to pick up those really subtle vibrations and frequencies that we can't hear, mm-hmm. and whenever they hooked them up to like plants and things, just regular house plants, they made a sound, and they even like made like a screaming sound when they were thirsty. I'm not kidding. That was actually a study.
That's terrible.
It really is. It's awful. I feel so sad for my former house plants because I have lost a few.
Well, I lose plants in the yard all the yeah. time, and I don't know why, but I'm just like, oh, I've been watering you. What's happening? I actually heard a study, and I might be totally kind of like off on this because it's been a while. So I just remember it was basically they were saying that the trees can communicate with another mm-hmm. tree. And so if it's sick, yeah. it has its ability to like get with that other tree somehow, like some kind of force or something. You yes. might have heard of this because I'm saying it wrong. But it's like it can help heal the other tree.
Yeah, I've heard that. And I heard that if there's some type of danger, they can alert the other ones.
That's so interesting.
And I think even maybe like if there's animals or something like that, they can make themselves taste bitter, certain particular types.
That's fascinating.
It really is.
I mean, I believe it because it's like God created it. It's amazing. There's things that we're still not comprehending or understanding, you know. Yeah. So it's kind of like just being open to all that stuff. And going back to the like kind of the Book of Enoch and the fallen angels, and I know we've thought about like that alien theory
yeah.
Of course, NASA having things, you know, under covers, and maybe they know more about like this, basically the falling angels and these yeah. entities. But I came across a really interesting story, mm-hmm. and we've talked about Atlantis and things like that before, so it kind of reminded you of that when I told you about it. But it was about a lady in 1984. She's 26 year old. And I hope I pronounce this right, but it's the Alonga tribe or Aloga. And it's from Ghana in West Africa. But she was missing for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she came back. She just showed up one day in her tribe. And they're like, where were you? Where were you? And she told them she was taken by the Mami water people. They mm-hmm. believe there that there's people that live under the water, and a lot they won't even go near the water. And she said she was taken there to have children for them. And it was just really a weird story because people at first were like, oh, she's lying, this is not true. But they're like, she had nothing to gain from this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was kind of like outcast. Like, people mm-hmm. did not want to believe this. And she had nothing to gain from this story. And not only that, well, where was she? I mean, it's a small tribe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and she was gone for 3 years. But it kind of reminds us of, like, the Greek story of the sirens, like, thousands of years old, maybe yeah. water people.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of reminded us of the Atlantis kind of story.
Well, stories. Yeah. Even, yeah, because the story of Atlantis is very strange, and it's essentially this island, it's underwater now,
mm-hmm.
and they can't find it. They've been looking for it. And there's actually a guy who was like a reader, and he was a psychic back mm-hmm. in the late 1800s. And he would go into this trance and he would absorb information from the Akashic records, which is supposed mm-hmm. to be this sort of record system throughout the world that you can tap into and sort of read and know things. But he said that we would be getting information about Atlantis. He predicted that in like 100 and so many years, basically coming up pretty soon, we're going to start having signs of Atlantis reappearing. I thought that was kind of
That would odd. Be fascinating.
Yeah, that would be really interesting and neat. And I mean, the story goes way back to Plato. He says that his uncle visited Egypt because mm-hmm. his uncle was also a great philosopher. His uncle visited Egypt, and when he went to Egypt, he was looking at these hieroglyphs on the wall, mm-hmm. and he was asking about the story. And the Egyptian people told him the story. Oh, well, don't you know about this story? Don't you? These are the records. We keep records here. And they said approximately 9,000 years from that date. So basically, it would be, I think, about 12,000 years ago now. But anyway, so they tell him the story about this island that sank and the gods sank it, but the people that lived there were supposed to be demigods or demigods. They were supposed to be part human and part god. And they were supposed to have all of these sort of spiritual and supernatural abilities, and they were supposed to have great, great, great technology.
Wow.
And eventually a flood occurred, and that flood sunk it.
Yep.
But of course, a lot of people say that these people, because of their supernatural abilities, they adapted or evolved and adapted to be underwater. There are some people that say that.
I'm not arguing anything. Yeah. I mean, like I said, we don't know really what's, I mean, we have to go by what we read in Jesus's word and things, but we also research and history and things. But it's kind of like, you never really know what's out. Like, we can't deny things because sometimes, like, just like the fallen angels, I mean, that stuff it sounds so, you know, absurd, but we know for a fact that, I mean, if you believe in the Bible, you believe it's there.
Yeah, and we don't get all of the details of things.
No,
we don't
no,
get all the details.
No,
The Bible doesn't present itself to be a history book.
No.
So, like, when you look at, and it does have historical significance, of course, it is telling us a lot of historical events, but it doesn't tell us the entire world's mm-hmm. history. So there's, you know, at the same time as we're reading about the Hebrews and how they are going into the promised land, there are a lot of other countries that are populated and that are having their own history at that time. And if God created a covenant with both Ishmael, which we see that in the Hebrew Bible, we see that in the Old Testament. So God created a covenant not just with Isaac, but also with Ishmael, two separate covenants.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy to see that if he did this, he could have created many, many covenants. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of, there's a Native American tribe. They're either called the Hopi or Hopi people,
mm-hmm.
but they're very, very interesting. And they talk about how we are currently in the fourth world, and they have this whole history, this creation history of how they came up and sprung up from the first world to the second to the third and now into the fourth. And eventually they're going to spring up into the fifth world. We're going to come into the fifth world.
Whoa.
But a lot of bad things are going to happen. They essentially prophesied like nuclear war, like,
well,
centuries ago.
Never know these days.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting though. And their story about how they related with the sky god that watched over them is so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me so much of Moses going through the desert, getting to the promised land, because they specifically say that there was a cloud that they followed, that God provided for them to follow. And it was a cloud during the day, and then it was like a star or a light at night, which is very similar, because Joseph in the promised land, they followed a cloud during the day, and then it would be like a bright light or star during the night. So it makes you think, and they made a pact or a covenant with God. And he talked about how there was going to be someone to come back to help save them and all sorts of things.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. There was, when the Spanish came initially to North America, they put this man through a series of tests to see if he was the right man that was supposed to come back, and mm-hmm. he failed the test. So I think that's interesting. So they're still waiting on it to happen.
Wow.
And they have these drawings on caves and on rocks. And if you look at the drawings, it kind of looks like the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. And it kind of points how they're going to come up to this fifth world. And it looks like it's going to be the North Star.
Oh, like, my gosh.
Like, that's kind of how it points to. And it says that it's going to be a blue star that's going to appear. So, it's really, I mean, when you look at how all of these different kind of religions and stuff intersect, it's so strange. And we were talking about spiritual awakenings and just the signs of a spiritual awakening. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the first ones that you think people notice?
I think that just like, cause I have a list of them, but it's kind of like one of them was more of like just kind of coming more aware of who you are or where you came from, mm-hmm. and wanting that curiosity to say, okay, is there more to this?
Yeah.
And then also questioning, like you question, you know, the government, you question other things like that. So it's kind of like, it's more of, for me, it's just been more of like an awakening for me, like I was talking about earlier, just seeing the world kind of with different eyes, like seeing the trees as more of mm-hmm. like energy, the, you know, just everything around you having more of a spiritual, you know, aspect to it than yeah. it's just, oh, it's just a tree or something.
Yeah. I think being open-minded.
Yes.
We were talking about yes. that one too. Like being open-minded, I think is one of the biggest things, because I used to have, I feel like I had like mm-hmm. a block of
yes.
like, I'll go here and then everything else is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I could never believe this, or I could never think this. Just, I mean, whether it's my government or whether it's to do with religion, mm-hmm. there was just such a gate there that I feel like needed to be opened.
Yeah.
And now I can see from different aspects, like, would our government do that? Probably.
Yes.
I wouldn't put it past them. And I mean, going back into the thing that we were talking about earlier with like the alien phenomenon, the government, what I think is so strange about that kind of thing mm-hmm. is just when you're really looking at it, we started to have this enormous amount of phenomenon.
Yes.
And we started to have a lot of people reporting abductions.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a professor, I think he was like a Harvard professor, and he was supposed to look into the phenomenon. And he's a psychiatrist, I believe. So he starts to look into it, initially expecting that he was going to figure out that all of these people were faking it or mm-hmm. have some type of mental illness. But to his surprise, he realized that the majority of the people he felt were not mentally ill. Very sane, in fact.
Mm.
And that he started to come to the opinion that he thought it was real, that it was a real wow. phenomenon that these people were experiencing. And so he ended up writing a lot of books, and he spent a long time doing a lot of research, and he got a lot of flack for it
wow.
too. It was not an easily accepted or digestible kind of thing. Mm. But one of the things that I thought was so strange is earlier when you were talking about this girl from this tribe that mm-hmm. got abducted, you said that she was gone for 3 years mm-hmm. and that she came back saying that they basically wanted people to have children for them.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is weird is when you tie that in with the UFO thing, one of the biggest things that people will say happened to them when they get abducted by a UFO is things to do with like fertility, like they take eggs or they probe them or
weird.
Just weird kind of things, like
weird.
They can't have their own children.
Yes.
And I'm not saying we're not saying we believe this stuff, like we're sold on it.
Yeah.
But what do you think? It's weird.
It is. Yeah. I don't know what people think. It's weird though. It's something to kind of think, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, you have to look at things with an open mind. Again, like part of the spiritual awakening is uh-huh. just maybe realizing that you don't know everything.
No, definitely not. And I know, you know, because in past videos, we always got a lot of slack For especially men thinking that we're trying to preach or something, which we're not preachers.
No.
I never want that responsibility. And I don't, you know, we've talked about this. Like, we don't, we're just sharing our personal beliefs and feelings and actually just discussing, like, sometimes, like, what do you think of this? Or what do you think of that? Or I found this and I found this interesting. It's kind of like a big web, putting little things together. But the thing that to me is the most fascinating is, like, going back to those, you know, things you're talking about. It's like all these different religions all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
How do they all have the same stories? Like, that's impossible. It's impossible for me. That is, there's no way. That's not a coincidence.
That's how I feel too. It's just like there has to be more to it. If the Egyptians have this story, and that's, you know, just talking about water people, that's not something that, I mean, like, I've been to the beach. I don't go around being like, I saw some water people.
No, I hope not. I don't want to see any water people.
But yet, we have every single ancient culture describing water people. We have the descriptions of, like, mermaids or sirens.
Yes.
Or different things like that. Like,
and the mammy people. The mammy water people. I mean, it's everywhere. There's just all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, even whenever you read about, like, the distribution of people, how during the Ice Age, you know, they went across this land bridge and this group of people. Mm-hmm. But then you'll read, like, for instance, the Native Americans, they believed that they came across during the Ice Age, but then they've found bones now that prove that they were here over 20,000 years ago.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's pretty interesting to me.
I mean, do you think, I don't know if this is true, but, or I don't even know if I'm, like, I really don't know how to explain it, but, like, when the fall of Babel, like, the, do you think when God split everybody up and they went in their own, like, different, basically, languages, and then they kind of split up, but God really was still over everybody? Because we know God does love everybody. He loves everybody of race, color, everything.
That's what I wonder
so
about.
So, it's just they all have their kind of own story on it, but it's the same God, you know?
Well, yeah, that's what I wonder about a lot, is that if we're looking at different covenants, we're looking at, you know, we read and we have access to the information. The Old Testament is one side of the covenant in which Jesus the Messiah was born through this covenant. Mm-hmm. And so, in that covenant connects all the covenants together. Yes. Like, that's why he really is the Messiah in the greatest sense of the word, would be that he connects and brought us all together.
Mm-hmm.
But we probably, I mean, this is again just a personal opinion or a personal thought of, like, I think maybe God had his own, like, separate covenants with all these different people.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't necessarily read theirs because they don't have that same, you know, they just have paintings on a cave or hieroglyphs on, you know, on a pyramid wall or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm just giving for instances, not necessarily those things, but just kind of, you know, they don't have the same writing, the same kind of way.
Speaking of the pyramids, you were telling me something that you found you thought was interesting about the face.
I've heard this a few times, but some people think that when you look at the Sphinx, that it's not actually supposed to have a pharaoh's head. They think that the Sphinx body is actually much, much older. The statue is much older than what they think it is or what they say it is. And originally it didn't have a pharaoh's head, but it most likely had a lion's head. And one of the reasons is if you look at the Sphinx, the head doesn't really fit. If you look at the size of it, the head of it is just looks way too small for the body.
True.
And these were people who were perfectionists.
Oh, they knew how to build stuff.
They knew how to build stuff. And they were perfectionists down to the last draw.
Yeah.
So what they think is that maybe a group stumbled upon it and then kind of took over the area and carved that pharaoh's head into basically the cat's head.
And so they think, though, originally it could have been like a lion.
Mm-hmm. Just like an actual lion. And again, that makes me think of like the Lion of Judah. We think about the 12 tribes. We have 12 tribes. We have 12 zodiac signs. We have 12 months in a year. We have 12 disciples. We have 12 of everything.
No coincidences.
Yes. Well, what's really weird too is I was reading about how suddenly this 13th constellation appeared. And it's this, like, I think it's called the Serpent Bearer.
Or really?
Yeah, there's people that argue that we should have 13 zodiac signs for the last several years.
Really? Well, I have not heard this.
Yeah, so there's, I mean, it's a
interesting
theory.
Interesting.
That really, to do it correctly, now we would have to have 13 signs. And of course, 13, since ancient times, 13 is supposed to be bad luck.
Yes.
And like, they won't have a 13th floor on a building. And of course, when we think about Jesus with his disciples, when they were all together at the Last Supper, 13, one of them was a traitor. One of them was
Judah.
Yeah, Judas. So Judas. When you think about like that kind of weird history of 13, but I think that's really weird too. They think there really should be like 13 zodiac signs now.
Interesting.
But 12 really has a great significance. Just in history and everything. I mean, you find it in everything.
I know.
It's your dozen.
That's true. It's the dozen. I mean, that's kind of like but numbers. We've talked a little bit about numbers in the past too, but how powerful they are and just seeing them and stuff.
The ancient philosopher Pythagoras, I think he had this strange kind of cult that followed him. And he basically believed that everything boiled down to numbers at its base. Like if you looked at something, everything kind of had a number. Everything was about this sort of beautiful synchronicity of numbers. And if you think about it, really, it is like that because everything has a vibration or frequency. That's even how crystals are supposed to operate.
Yeah.
Because when they measure this frequency, or the plants, they measure this frequency. We measure this frequency because our atoms are vibrating and we all have this frequency. So really, he was right thousands of years ago. And he's one of the oldest philosophers. And he had this, he had this kind of cult. And they followed him around and they had all these different beliefs. One of them, of course, was that you weren't supposed to eat beans. I don't know why, but I just found that little piece so strange. But he said that it was, they were vegetarians.
Mm-hmm.
But he said beans resembled babies too closely, or they resembled like
weird
life too closely.
Whoa.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, and in the eating habits, I know this is going off subject, but the eating habits of different places are so interesting to me. Like the Hindus don't really eat cows because they think that they're sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, they're not the only ones to do that either. Mm-hmm. There's a few. And then the ancient Zoroastrians, they believed that cattle had great significance too. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like how we wouldn't eat a dog or we wouldn't eat a horse.
Yeah.
They believe that you shouldn't eat cows, but I mean, I do, so I'm not, I'm not saying anything. I just think it's interesting.
It's interesting, but yes, that'd be hard to give up.
It would be hard to give away the cheeseburger.
I know.
It would be hard.
That'd be super hard. Well, but, it takes you back to that. You're better at this than me because you can think on the fly more. But there's that scripture that Jesus says, it's like nothing that goes, what is it, into the body defiles it?
Yes.
But what is it?
Yes, before they wanted him to wash up or whatever because that was their tradition. But he said nothing that goes in the body defiles it. It's what comes out of the body. And that's what makes me think about, like, being a vegetarian or whatever. I can see the significance in that. But I think really it's true. Like he's saying, it's not necessarily a sin what you put into your body, because maybe it does become one with you. Like you do become something with it. Like it becomes part of your cells. You use it as energy. You use it. So, I mean, I can see what he's saying, too. It's what comes out. It's what we produce with that energy. It's what we
put
forth. That's
true. There's also scriptures that talk about that they're saying, and I don't know who said this. I feel horrible, but I can't remember. But they're basically saying, like, if you feel like, was it Jesus?
Paul.
Paul. Okay, well, if you feel like it's a sin, or if this is, you know, if you're eating this and it makes you feel like this is a sin, then it's a sin to you. But if you, you know, don't, I'm not saying this correctly, but if, you know, if you feel like that in your heart, like it's a sin, don't eat it. But if you don't, then eat it.
Yeah, Paul says if it's, if you're called by your own consciousness, basically, like, if you're called to not eat meat and you feel guilty eating it, then it is a sin for you.
Yeah.
But if you don't, then you, then it's not a sin for you. Yeah. And, I mean, I think that's, if you really think about it, I think that's true in a lot of ways. Because, I mean, if you think about a person who grows up in a certain way and isn't introduced to certain things. But they have goodness in their heart. They have kindness in their heart. And again, just kind of going back to like, what can you mentally kind of think of or mentally do? Like, what are you capable of? People have different, they grow up different ways, but they're also born different ways. And so do I think that God is going to hold somebody accountable for this like really high standard of remembering to do certain things? I even wash their hands before, you know, just certain things like that. If they're not really capable of understanding it. And so I think Paul made a great point there.
Yeah, I agree. So it's kind of like what you think. Like you can eat what you want if you feel like it's okay. Yeah,
I would think so. I mean, hopefully not eating cows is bad.
No, I hope not.
I made a lot of them, unfortunately. Now, I do feel bad about the way we treat animals. I do wish that we did.
Yes.
Better.
I mean, in this, in our country in general, yes, I hope something changes where the food industry changes and we can have more, you know, because the thing is, it's so expensive, going off subject, but it's so, you know, you'll hear doctors say, oh, you need grass-fed beef. You need, and I'm like, oh, geez, thank you. But, you know, what average American
can afford
can
that?
Can afford that? None.
Yeah.
None that I know. I mean, you have to really be up there. You're going to be paying that much.
And it's super
And it's
expensive.
Sad. It's really sad.
It really is, because you want to eat healthy things. And if you think about it, kind of like hormones, like people have so many issues with hormones right now. And I wonder if it's, of course, people have talked about for years, is it the hormones that are being injected into the animals that we're then consuming? I don't see how that doesn't have an effect on us. I just think it probably does. But also, when I think about life, when I think about eating an animal, think about how depressed some of these animals are, like these chickens that never see the light of day.
It's horrible.
That, which, I mean, not to get into this whole,
I know. We're here.
Yeah, but think about it. Like, you're eating something that's very depressed. You're consuming
it. It's horrible.
So it's like, I have to immediately go back to that thing where Jesus is saying, like, when you put something into your body. But he does bless his food.
Yeah. And so, we have to do that.
Yeah.
These days, especially.
Yeah. So I think that that's like a really important thing to do. And that's like something that I've really started doing a lot lately. And I remember doing it as a kid. Like we would pray before we ate. But I, as an adult, we really quit doing it. And it's something that I've been trying to do a lot again. Even if it's, even if we're eating out or something, it's like, let me bless the food. Let's say a quick, quick prayer or a quick blessing. Because I am thinking to myself, like, you know, you are consuming something that was, like, sad. Whereas if it was killed in the wild. And there's a group of people, I think it is Zoroastrians, that they have to, if they're going to eat an animal, typically, especially back in the day, I don't know about now. But in ancient times, they wanted to be the ones that took that animal's life if they were going to eat it. They didn't kill for sport. It was, like, a really an intimate thing, what you ate. And I do think that we've removed that.
Oh, definitely.
I think it was done on purpose. I think it was, I don't think it was something that happened by accident, but we've removed the intimacy that you should experience with your food. You should know where your food comes from. You know, there should be, you should be having this relationship with nature and being grateful to God when you get food. And it just kind of reminds me of like now, within just a small amount of time, you could seriously go to my great grandmother, and my great grandmother would have known how to get food.
Yeah.
And they were farmers. And I mean, just a couple of generations.
It's gone.
I would have no idea how to get food. Like, isn't that, it's so strange.
It's
like,
scary.
It really is. It is. Like, we would have no idea. We don't have any animals. We don't have, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We don't even know how to do these things anymore. To strip away our ability to survive is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happened on a mass scale in a very short amount of time.
So true.
I don't think that's coincidence.
No. And not, you know, not just the animals, but it's kind of like even the vegetables, even the fruits, mm-hmm. everything, even if like you are vegetarian or whatever, it's like that vegetables now they're saying do not have the nutrients and the minerals we're needing.
Yeah.
Because it's soil. The ground is so depleted. And, you know, it reminds me of the scriptures and when they talk about let the ground rest for 7 years. Like, we can't even go back to the basics. You know, they want to strip and strip and strip everything from the soil. Yeah. And then we have no nutrients. So people are like, oh, I got to take these supplements or these vitamins to try to put it back. But there's nothing better than the real thing.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing better than the real thing. And you know how I know that for a fact? I've taken so many different supplements.
I know,
for
nails, me too.
Like for hair, skin, and nails. And my nails just don't grow. They're very thin. They always have been. But I've taken so many things like the collagen and the mm-hmm. certain vitamins. I'm serious. Once it's warm out though, and I'm actually getting real vitamin D,
mm-hmm.
I swear they grow faster and I swear my hair grows faster and my nails aren't so thin.
Yep.
So it's like you can take all the supplements that are, mm-hmm. you know, chock full of all of these things.
Yep.
It's nothing quite like the real
no.
thing.
It's not.
I mean, I'll still take them. I'm trying.
Yeah, I have to, really, because yeah. that, you know, the food we're getting, what else option do we have? I mean,
yeah.
We have to.
And, you know, just kind of like on the food thing, I was thinking the other day, because I was eating tuna, and I've been eating a lot of tuna lately, and I'm like, we really are supposed to eat a lot of fish. We really are supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I take fish oil supplements. But, you know, then they scare you and they're like, there's lead in the fish. There's lead in the fish.
Well,
I was opening up the fish. And I'm like, oh, but if I keep eating tuna, there's lead. But then I literally had to stop myself and I had to start like, hold on a second. It's one way or the other. Like, I got to have one or the other. It's kind of like the same with the sun. Like, I used to avoid... There was a time in my life where I did avoid the sun where I'm like, okay.
Me too. We talked about that.
This is going to, you know, but I need my vitamin D. And
I have to have it.
Yes. So it's like, sometimes we have to step away from the fear and mm-hmm. just like, okay, there's this fear. There's this, don't do this. Don't do this. This might happen. And you have to kind of split and divorce the fear. And really kind of pull in and go, okay, hold on. If I start to feel like I'm getting lead poisoning, then I'll back off. But I'm going to eat fish.
Yeah, and I think the fear going back to like, it's just, that's a part of the enemy. He tries to get us through fear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of his common attacks on us. And it doesn't give us peace. And it's kind of basically like going back to like the positivity and manifestation. It's like speaking it over and blessing your food.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of just, I don't know, for me it's just full circle on really just noticing everything going on around us and just being open-minded to everything. But also, keeping that fear at bay. You don't ever want to give into that fear.
Yeah. And
it's not easy.
Yeah, there's lots of times because, I mean, your body... Your brain naturally is hardwired to just absorb fear.
Yes.
And especially at a time like this where things do feel, when we talk about the spiritual awakening, the next thing that pops into my mind is when you begin to question everything, there is a paranoia that develops.
Yeah.
There is, once you acknowledge and go, okay, I can't really trust everybody. I can't really trust the government to tell me what's right. I can't really trust... Mm-hmm. All these different things. So when you look at it that way, there's a paranoia that can develop and mm-hmm. that can actually increase with a fear.
Yes.
And pull it closer to you. And again, with like law of attraction, if we are these like powerful beings, we are the children of God and we have this great power to attract,
Yes.
We do want to be feeling a good way and yes. thinking good thoughts. So even though we can know something's true, like we can know, okay, I can't believe everything this person says. You can know that lies exist and mm-hmm. that you're going to be constantly faced with lies. But don't let it make you cynical completely in the world. And mm-hmm. don't let it make you paranoid of the world or paranoid of everybody. Mm-hmm. You still want to be very open and receptive to love, and you want to be on that level and that frequency of love so that you can feel it and attract it, because you'll yes. attract people like you.
True.
And I mean, that's just, I don't know, that's just kind of something that I've been this is getting weird with our manifestation practices. Like
it's getting stronger. I think it's getting stronger. And it's kind of like what I talked to you about, is just like really zoning in on not the big picture, but the little picture, kind mm-hmm. of like the steps, the baby steps of things. Yeah. And that's kind of been helping me along. Mm-hmm. And just getting different, reading different material on it and stuff. So that's been helpful. And just really staying positive and being just really aware of what you're speaking. For me, it's been lately just like really trying not to speak anything. I don't care if I'm joking. I don't care who I'm talking to, but nothing of like negativity.
What was that verse that you were talking about?
Well, I was reading a book, and it was just talking about like believing and having faith, and you know, it was basically a book on like, you know, bringing the old, basically the acts, like the Pentecostal side of things back, like, you know, not that you don't have to be Pentecostal, but it's kind of like the Holy Spirit, bringing the Holy Spirit back into the church mm-hmm. and not being so ashamed or afraid of the Holy Spirit. It's more of like God gave us the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
So I just been reading a lot about that. And this guy was reading, he's talking about just believe. You have to first believe and say it, and then the faith will follow. Mm-hmm. But I was reading, and he was talking about how in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, in all three Gospels, the word believe is like 9 times mm-hmm. total. But he said in the book of John, mm-hmm. he says believe 99 times. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he was kind of making a joke about it, because it's like, well, you know, maybe there was something to when, you know, John said, I'm the disciple that Jesus loves. Well, maybe so, because it's like he had that belief. It's written in there. He had it believed 99 times. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like maybe he did have that little special, you know, more special connection with Jesus, because out of all the times, Jesus always tells us, believe, believe, believe. And that's really what he wants from us, is to have mm-hmm. faith and believe in him. And that is how he works through yeah. us.
And John went on to live a long time and ended up writing Revelation also.
So, yeah, I just thought that was, you know, like a little coincidence. Yeah. A little bit of tidbit. I thought it was interesting. But
you know what I was reading that I thought was strange? You know, King David, mm-hmm. he would play his songs for, was it King Saul? To keep him from feeling, mm-hmm. from going crazy.
I think so.
But he would play his songs, and I didn't even know this. But this is actually an older thing that's been known for a while. Like, Psalms is supposed to be a book of sending demons away.
Really?
Yes. And like receiving blessings.
Really?
And so if you go through it and you read it, there's supposed to be these like little bits and pieces. Like, you can read it to send demons away, like to banish them.
Interesting.
And so if you go through it, though, when I started reading it, I'm like, oh, I could get this. And it's basically like, I mean, I don't want to use the word spells, mm-hmm. but it's supposed to be like a book of like speaking things.
Well, you know, that's actually, because I do my little devotional every morning, and that is, I read, I call it God's 911, mm-hmm. but it's Psalms 91:1. Mm-hmm. But if I read the whole thing, and it's just kind of started that years ago, I actually started it during the pandemic, mm-hmm. but it, you know, it talks about like how he's going to protect you, and he's going to protect your house and your family, and nothing can touch you, and he puts his hedge of protection around you.
Yeah.
But I can see that. I've never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I found that interesting. But yeah, that's kind of one of my go-tos. I just like to make basically like a declaration.
Yeah.
Over the family and, you know, everybody.
Well, see, I think I do remember you telling me that now, but I didn't remember that whenever I was thinking of this.
That's interesting.
But I just read this the other day, and I thought it was really interesting, because, yeah, he used to sing these songs, and he could keep the demons at bay.
Wow.
In the Southern man's mind. And when I think about it now, that makes sense. Okay, these are his psalms. These are the stories of how to keep these things at bay. And it's weird, but, like, whenever you want to feel really close to Jesus, of course you read the Gospels. Like, that's how I'll feel close to God. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, whenever I want to feel a sense of empowerment of God's love or protection, it's like Psalms is where you go.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever want wisdom or advice, Proverbs is where you go. And it's like, you do know these things sort of instinctively.
Very true. Very true.